Welcome to Journey of the Monkey King, a chapter-by-chapter discussion of Journey to the West. I'm Quiva, and I'm joined by my friend MJ.
Hello!
At the end of the last chapter, the forces of heaven were laying siege to the Monkey King's home in the Water Curtain Cave. After a day of battle, both sides retired to the night to continue the fight the next day. So, you raring up to get a battle going?
Yeah, I mean, they're gonna come... I'm sure that this is gonna, they're gonna come out guns and giant rod blazing, and this isn't going to be one of those weird anti-climaxes where actually they decide to call it a day.
Well, first we're gonna go back to heaven to check in on the great compassionate deliverer, the efficacious Bodhisattva Guanyin of the Potalaka Mountain, the Potalaka Mountain of the South Sea. Some mountain in the South Sea that I cannot say. I'm very sorry.
One of those.
Yeah, that was a mess. We will just be calling her Guanyin, but Guanyin is short for Guanxiyin, which means one who perceives the sounds of the world.
Oh, cool. Okay, perceptive.
She was one of the guests invited to the Grand Festival of Immortal Peaches and arrives to find the mess that Sun Wukong left. She asks the other guests who are there what's happened, and when it's explained to her, she leads them all to the Jade Emperor to have an audience with him. The Jade Emperor explained what's happened, and it kind of, we get a little bit of a recap of the previous chapter, and who Sun Wukong is. And he does actually mention the golden beams of light from his eyes again, so I was wrong, that does come up again.
Woo! I was very, very excited about the monkey with lasers from his eyes. That was...
He's not going to do it again, just to be clear, but it has been mentioned again. So, there's been no news back about the siege at the Flower Fruit Mountain, so the Jade Emperor isn't sure what's actually happening at the moment. Guanyin offers to send down her disciple Hui An to go find out what's going on and report back. She also says that if there's fighting happening, he can help out.
Okay.
Hui An is Li Jing's second son and Nata's older brother. His given name is Moksha, and I'll use that from now on instead. So Moksha heads down and is allowed to pass through the cosmic net once his father grants permission. Li Jing and his son recap the plot to each other a bit. There's a lot of that in this chapter. I will skip it all. It's a bit annoying. As they're doing this, a soldier runs in to report that the Monkey King is leading his troops back into battle. So Moksha volunteers to go fight the Monkey King himself, and his dad tells him to go ahead, but to be careful. They fight for 50 or 60 rounds, it says, but Moksha's shoulders start to go numb from the blows, and he retreats back again.
So you're the measurement person, lady. How is a round measured in this instance? Because I'm just thinking of, like, when I hear 50 or 60 rounds, I'm thinking, like, an interminable battle in D&D.
I don't know, it's not specified. I kind of imagine it more like in a boxing match, not like a formal round in a boxing match, but how, you know, lads will kind of square up, they'll go into each other, give in a few digs, and then pull back again. That's kind of what I'm imagining a round being, but okay. It's not defined.
Fair. Okay, just wondering.
Yeah. Li is shocked that a second one of his sons has been beaten and sends Moksha and the Demon King Mahabali to deliver a written report to the Jade Emperor. When the Jade Emperor gets the report, he actually just starts laughing and calls the whole situation absurd.
I mean, at this point, yeah.
Yeah, it's a really genuine reaction, I think. Yeah. Just like, what can you do but laugh?
Yeah, it's that everything has gone wrong sort of thing. I mean, at this point, just leave the guy alone. He's embarrassed in his cave anyway. Just leave him be, quintuple immortal.
Guanyin is still present, and she suggests asking the god Erlang to help. Erlang is a god with a third eye in the middle of his forehead that can see truth. Which sounds cool.
Okay. Very cool.
Erlang is the Jade Emperor's nephew on his mother's side, but he doesn't live in heaven. He lives at the mouth of the River of Libations, and Mahabali is sent to summon him. When Erlang gets the summons, he calls together his own forces. He commands 1,200 plant-headed deities and the six brothers of Plum Mountain. The four Grand Marshals, Kang, Zhang, Yao, and Li, and the four generals, Gu Shen and Zhi Jian.
Plant-headed deities is an interesting one.
Yeah, there's no elaboration on that. He just has plant-headed deities.
If there's no elaboration, I will go ahead and imagine that they can morph their heads into whatever plants they choose, and they're all showing up the immortal peaches just to piss Sun Wukong off.
I'm just picturing the neighbor woman from Tuca and Bertie.
Fair, yeah.
Erlang and his forces head to the Flowerfruit Mountain, bringing hounds and falcons with them.
Ooh.
Erlang says his forces can handle things, and all he needs from Li Jing is to stand in midair with his imp-reflecting mirror in order to track the Monkey King's movements if he tries to flee.
Okay, so he's on recon.
Yep. They go into battle, and Erlang fights with a lance with 3 points and 2 blades, and Wukong with his staff. The fight goes for more than 300 rounds this time, but neither of them can defeat the other.
Okay.
Erlang then uses his magic to grow to 100,000 feet tall, and Wukong does the same. They're still equally matched, but then the Monkey King realizes while he's been fighting Erlang, Erlang's forces have utterly routed all the other monkeys, and they've all fled.
So, well, it's a good thing he's got his portable army.
No, on seeing this, he just kind of loses heart and turns and flees himself.
Aw.
Yeah, it's a little sad. Erlang calls after him and says that if he surrenders now, his life will be spared, but Wukong ignores him and just legs it. He runs past the six brothers. They try to grab him, but he turns into a sparrow and flies off and hides in a tree.
He likes hiding in trees.
He's a monkey.
He's a monkey, yeah. Keep forgetting that. Forgetting that bit.
Erlang catches up and asks the brothers where Wukong went, but they can't find him. Erlang uses his third eye and sees him hiding in the tree as a sparrow, so he turns into a sparrowhawk to attack him.
It's getting real.
Yeah, they have a little bit of a transformation dueling. Wukong turns into a cormorant and flies upwards into the sky, and Erlang in turn transforms into a huge crane to follow him. Wukong dives down instead and turns into a small fish as he dives into a stream. Erlang follows to the edge of the water, figures that the Monkey King must have turned into a fish, and turns into a fishhawk and starts skimming over the surface of the water looking for him. And Wukong sees a bird flying above the water with features like a kite, an egret, and a crane, but not quite exactly like any of them, and realizes it must be Erlang and turns around to swim the other way.
I feel like, you know, turning into a fish is a risky move in a shape-shifting fight.
he's more just trying to get away at this point.
True. I mean, it's just kind of like you turn back into something else, you might drown. You've only got kind of one avenue of movement.
So Erlang similarly sees a fish with features a bit like a carp, a perch, a snakefish, and a bream, but not quite exactly like any of them, and the fish suddenly turns to run away whenever he gets close to it, so he realizes that must be Wukong. He swoops down at it, but Wukong turns into a water snake and escapes into the grass beside the bank of the stream.
I do like how the author is just taking great pains to point out that neither of these creatures know what wildlife look like.
They know enough to identify that each other's disguises aren't perfect.
Yeah, fair. They can't quite pull it off. It's like being an artist and not being able to draw hands properly.
Hands are impossible.
They're very
Hands and cars are fucking impossible.
I have not tried to draw either for many, many years, but yeah, I am in awe of anyone who can.
Erlang changes into a crane again to attack, but Wukong turns into a bustard.
A what?
A bustard. It's a type of bird.
Okay, fair.
It's spelled like bastard, but one letter is different.
Not a buzzard? A buster? I've never bustard, heard of one, but I will take your word for it.
Bustards are like, they're flightless predator birds.
Okay.
If I remember correctly. But anyway, Erlang is disgusted by this and refuses to go near the bustard, as apparently Bustards are the most promiscuous type of bird, and he's really disgusted by that.
How dare you turn into a bird that fucks? Get away from me with your slutty feathers, you!
Wukong just, like, prancing around, waving his feathers seductively.
Yeah, you want some of this? Don't slut shame birds! Sorry, I love that. I love that very much.
It's really silly.
So, yeah, if you want to get away from an all-powerful deity, just turn yourself into the sluttiest bird you can.
So Erlang instead just turns back into his true form and draws and looses his bow at Wukong. Wukong is hit, but he rolls with it and uses the momentum from being struck to roll down the side of the mountain to get away. And at the bottom of the mountain, he turns into a small temple as his like last-ditch disguise. His mouth is the entrance, his teeth are the doors, and his eyes are the windows.
That's fair.
Yeah, he has trouble getting rid of his tail, though, in this shapeshifting, so he turns it into a flagpole sticking up behind the shrine.
Okay. So he's gone from the sluttiest bird ever to his body literally being a temple.
Erlang arrives at the bottom of the slope, and seeing a temple instead of the bustard he shot, examines it for a second. I'm not sure if I'm really pronouncing bustard correctly.
Bustard.
Yeah, because I've only ever seen it written down, and I didn't look it up.
Can we just call it the slut bird from now on?
The slut bird is gone, and there's a temple there.
Yeah, that makes me very happy. Thank you, Quiba.
But he sees the flagpole up behind the temple, and he laughs because he thinks it looks kind of funny because he's never seen a temple or a flagpole before. And he figures it must be Sun Wukong in disguise. And he says out loud he's going to smash in the windows and kick in the doors.
Ooh.
Yeah, so Monkey hears this and panics again and flees into the air. And he actually finally manages to get away from Erlang.
Does he flee into the air as a temple? Like, is this just this giant flying building? You thought the flagpole was weird.
I gotta say yes, just because that's a funny image.
It's a nice image. It's a nice image. And it's probably a very slutty temple, too.
Using body concealment magic, he's able to slip past the cordon entirely. And he decides to head to Erlang's home at the River of Libations to hide. Last place he'll look.
Yeah, I guess.
So he transforms into Erlang and heads inside, fooling all the guards. So meanwhile, Erlang goes to Li Jing, who's been tracking Wukong in the mirror, and he's able to tell Erlang where Wukong's gone. So Erlang goes to confront him at home. At the door, he asks his men if the so-called great sage equal to heaven came here. They say no, but there's another Erlang inside examining all the offerings.
So he's sizing up what he wants to take as well. Fair, okay. Okay, he's... yeah.
When Erlang rushes in to confront him, Wukong just turns back to his normal form and they start to fight again. He's got his nerve back a bit. They fight while flying in the air and end up all the way back at the Flowerfruit Mountain again. Meanwhile, Mahabali has reported back to heaven and the Jade Emperor wonders why there hasn't already been a report back from the Flowerfruit Mountain if Erlang went there to fight immediately. He expected it to be over pretty quickly after Erlang arrived.
He didn't reckon on quintuple immortality and avian slut-shaming.
No. Monkey's real ace in the hole, slut bird. the Jade Emperor, Guan Yin, Lao Zi, and the Queen Mother all go to the South Heaven Gate to watch the battle themselves from on high. Guan Yin decides to help Erlang in the fight by throwing a vase at Wukong from heaven.
Okay. It's a move.
Yeah. Yeah, I love that. It feels very video gamey to me, almost.
No, my one weakness, pottery. No.
Yeah, it's a bit Zelda.
Yeah.
But Lao Zi thinks it would be a shame to break it, so he's just throwing something he has instead. He rolls up his sleeve and pulls off a red armulet. It's a shape-shifting piece of red steel that's a byproduct of the process he uses to make his elixir, and it's indestructible. He calls it the Diamond Snare.
Ooh.
He hurls the diamond snare at Wukong from heaven, and it hits him directly in the head and knocks him to the ground. Wukong tries to climb to his feet to escape, but Erlang's hound rushes in and sticks his teeth into his calf, bringing him down again.
Oof.
Yeah, nasty. Erlang and the six brothers run in and are finally able to tie him up, and they puncture his breastbone with a knife, which makes him unable to shapeshift anymore.
Oh, okay. So he's a little fucked.
Sounds painful, too.
Yeah. Oof.
Thousy retrieves the diamond snare, and he and the other immortals watching from the South Heaven Gate return to the Emperor's throne room. On Earth, Li Jing congratulates Erlang, and together they drag the Great Sage back to Heaven to face the Jade Emperor's judgment. So, the Heaven-born Stone Monkey, the Monkey King, Sun Wukong, the Banhorse Plague, the Great Sage, equal to Heaven, is sentenced to death by being cut into small pieces.
Ooh.
You can find out how that goes in Chapter 7.
How does the quintuple immortality intersect with this?
I'm not sure what to say because we get the answer to that immediately at the start of Chapter 7.
Okay, fair. I will just leave it at that. I imagine this is not a successful execution.
I've said it a lot. He's the main character. He's not going to die at this point in the book.
You also said that there were lots of plot threads that looked like they were going to go somewhere and then did not. Yeah, it could be he just dies and then the whole thing is, I don't know, Lao Tzu redecorating.
And I just named this podcast really, I named this podcast really badly. In fairness, I do call him the main character, and like, I think in practical terms he is, he completely steals the show. But technically, the titular journey to the West is not his journey.
Ooh, okay.
But he absolutely steals the show from the kind of nominal main character who has not been introduced yet.
Interesting, okay. But I would not put it past this show for the rest of it just to be, you know, that's he redecorating his house. Interior decoration with Lao Tzu, and then bird watching for the remainder.
Or like having a really nice day, recording all the birds he's seeing, and then seeing a slut bird and just being furious,
just storming off in disgust and smashing his binoculars and just how dare they?
And then he's watching like a beautiful crane. And he watches it and it flies back to its nest. If cranes have nests, I have no idea. And then it starts to fuck and he's just fucking, like, his worldview is shattered.
or he's just observing, you know, a beautiful, beautiful nest of swallows and just, and then just, I like imagining him being stalked by the slut bird. Like, he's just... taking in everything else and having a lovely, relaxing time looking out at the pretty birds through his third eye, and then boom, slut bird! And it's like, ah! You found me again!
I do have some footnotes on Erlang. So, the name Erlang means second son, and he's the second son of the Jade Emperor's sister. And there's, I think, a couple versions of this story, but the particular one that is referenced briefly in this novel is that she married a mortal man and was imprisoned by her brother in Mount Tao for doing that. And she was eventually freed by Erlang himself, who cut the mountain in half with an axe to free her.
Okay, so he may have some issues there. He's named second son?
Yeah.
That's very unfortunate. It's just like, imagine like being named middle child. And he freed her from where she was imprisoned for presumably marrying his father?
Yeah, for marrying a mortal who was his father.
Okay, this is an interesting chap.
And also, if Wikipedia is to be believed, he was possibly a real person.
Oh.
The son of Li Bing, a hydraulic engineer in the 3rd century BCE Warring States period, who designed the Dujiangang irrigation and flood control system, which still exists.
Oh, what? So more civil engineering.
Yeah, more hydraulic engineering specifically.
I found
that really funny when I was writing the script for this chapter that I looked up Erlang a bit and realized there's more than one person in Chinese history who was deified for hydraulic engineering.
Surely they have their own canon.
I want to emphasize that, according to Wikipedia, this is a flood control system that was built in the 3rd century BCE and still exists.
That's very cool.
Yeah.
That's extremely cool.
That is, yeah, I like that. That's worthy of apotheosis.
Yeah, I've said before about how much I love that version of the flood myth. It's just kind of like, okay, so we've got to sort this out. You know, that we're not waiting for divine intervention here. We're just gonna figure out how to do this.
And in the more legendary version of that feat of civil engineering, Erlang helped his father to control the flooding by capturing a dragon who was the god of the local river.
Okay, so it's hydraulic engineering and a little bit of kidnapping.
Yeah.
And violence. I like that. As a combination, that seems sad.
And yeah, I guess that's it for chapter 6. Bye.
Thank you.
Oakreef on Twitter, Monkey King Pod on Twitter, T Shaco Trash on Twitter, MJ Stokes on Instagram, Hysteria Network. Bye.
Yep. That's what we're looking. Yep, cool. This has been a very low energy episode.
I mean, I'm 6 episodes in, I'm already sick of giving social media links that, like, people are probably not going to follow.
Like, comment, subscribe!